Hello and welcome to this edition of the Dawson Podcast with Rex and Lav. Happy U.S. Open week. We are indeed at Pinehurst number two, the 124th U.S. Open. And yes, before anyone asks, if you're watching this on YouTube, Rex and I are indeed separated by probably 15 feet. Over the past month, we have not yet figured out the technology that allows us to do it in a single shot. So here we are. Hopefully, there are no complaints. Rex, what is top of mind as we are now less than 24 hours till the opening tee shot here at the year's third major?
I think it happened when I was here in 2014 for the Pinehurst Open. I don't remember back to the Opens before that. This is my fourth Open covering in Pinehurst. But it almost, after 10 years, you forget how cool this place is. You did not, as you've stated numerous times on this podcast, humble brag, you were here just last month playing the golf course, and it was a glorious day. But it's once you get here on property, and you see what the USGA has done with the golf course, and you see how Pinehurst Resort has allowed it to, after the redesign right before the 2014 U.S. Open, it's matured. The wild areas have become more wild. The rounded greens have become more rounded. All of the classic things we love about this golf course, they're all right there. It was funny. I was doing a story that we're going to post on NBCSports.com/golf later tonight of Eric Compton, who, if you remember correctly, back to 2014, he finished second here. It was a bit of a magical week for a guy who had struggled in his life with a lot of health issues. And during the conversation, he sort of explained to me why this particular venue sort of suits a player like an Eric Compton. And he threw out Harry Higgs as a possible example. And he said, unlike the, let's say, Valhalla last month at the PGA Championship, to be fair, sorry, PGA of America, but Valhalla and most PGA Championship setups are just juiced up PGA Tour setups. And what you're doing is you're just favoring those players that we see pretty much week in and week out on the PGA Tour. That's not a bad thing, but it's not quite variety. The difference this week is because you have to do everything so well, and because this golf course is so exacting, we can sit here and we'll have a long conversation about why Scottie Scheffler should be the runaway favorite this week. But it does tend itself to sort of recognize a player that's not on our radar, Michael Campbell being a primary example. Payne Stewart probably isn't a great example, but certainly you go back to what happened here in 2014. Martin Kaymer was playing well, but I don't think anybody would have expected him to run away with a U.S. Open by 8 shots. I think that's the beauty of Pinehurst.
Yeah, I want to be very clear that all of the game's best players are here. You have Scotty, you have Rory, you have big stars like Tiger. John Rahm is not here. We'll get into him in a little bit. But the superstar this week at this 124th U.S. Open is undoubtedly the golf course. And what I love about Pinehurst number two, and it's something I don't think I recognized or realized when I covered the 2014 U.S. Open here. I did not have Inside the Ropes, and so you're kind of at the mercy of TV and sort of wading through the crowds. But I think it's when you see the golf course up close and personal that you realize sort of the intricacies and what makes this such an iconic venue. And to me, it's the fear element that has been lost, I think, in tournament golf. With all the supercharged equipment in today's modern game, players are essentially bending those golf courses to their will. It's very one-dimensional. You're grabbing driver, you go find it, you hack it on the green, and whoever fills it up the most that week tends to win on the PGA Tour. There's very little variety. There's very few options. It's basically a one-size-fit-all. That is exactly the opposite of what players are going to face here at Pinehurst number two. And that's why I'm so excited for this major championship. There is an unpredictability with the lies in the sandy area. There's an unpredictability with the lies in the green surrounds and those tightly mown Bermuda areas. There's so much variety that you can choose from the clubs that you're hitting to sort of the outcomes too, with the graininess and sort of the disaster element, whether it's stubbing one, whether it's boning one over the green, playing ping pong, downhill putts, whatever the case may be. I think that is what has.
But that's enough on Johnson Wagner. Let's move on to the rest of the field.
But I think that's added such a fascinating element to this, because it is very rare for today's best players to have fear introduced. And that's exactly what this U.S. Open does. You heard it on Wyndham Clark on Monday saying that the greens are already borderline. And Victor Hovland saying that the USGA has to be careful because if you get pins too close to some of these ridges and the edges of the greens, like it's going to be a little bit of goofy golf. Pinehurst number two is already in the heads of the best players and the best caddies And I think that's a lot of fun as we get ready for the first ball to be struck.
See, after 2 hours on live from, you thought you were talked out. You had plenty left in the tank. See, you had nothing to worry about.
Oh, I could have gone. I could have gone for many hours. That is why I look like a waiter at the moment.
You kind of do.
Just with a little bit of some makeup. Rex, let's get into the chief contenders now that we've touched on the golf course. Scottie Scheffler, 5 wins in his last 8 starts. The prohibitive favorite, the overwhelming favorite at 3-1 odds. We have not seen odds that low for a player at a major championship since Tiger Woods at the 2009 PGA Championship. By the way, he did not win that one, but it was only because of a surprising result. This was a question that we posed on NBCSports.com/golf on Wednesday, Scottie Scheffler or the field. On its face, that is an absolutely preposterous statement. But what say you, Scottie Scheffler or the field?
I went with Scottie Scheffler. I think you ended up taking the field for all the reasons. It's Scottie now, it's Scottie tomorrow, it's Scottie until he proves to me that there's going to be a hiccup along the way. And I say that in as much as I'm also going to circle back around to the golf course. And we were kind of breaking it down earlier in the week. You and I kind of did our song and dance yesterday on live from on the early show. And the idea is you always want to try to identify one thing on a particular golf course that you need to do well to excel on that golf course. And it's really, really hard to do that here for all the reasons you just pointed out, because it's going to test every aspect of your game. It is interesting. I was talking with one statistician whose idea was the most important stat is fairway accuracy, which is weird because this statistician had never used that stat before. And I've been working with him for 10 years and he's never used that specific stat. And his argument was even the best ball strikers, i.e. Scottie Scheffler, is going to miss greens just because you can't be that exact. Not with a golf ball, not with Mother Nature, not with wind gusts, not with greens that are going to be as firm and fast as these are. And so everybody's going to end up missing a green. And that's going to happen. And that's where the short game comes in and scrambling. I'll go back to 2014. Martin Kaymer, he one-putted 49% of his greens that week. I'll say it again. He one-putted 49% of his greens that week. He didn't finish at 30 under par. He finished at 9 under par. So you get an idea. He was doing a lot of putting from off the greens and knocking it to tap in range and moving on to the next hole. That's going to be what we're going to see here. It's going to be that variety. Where things are going to get crazy is if you're in the fairway by a foot, you're going to end up with a perfect lie. There's only two mowing heights here. There's green length and then there's everything else. So there's no rough, so to speak. So if you're a foot inside the fairway, you have a perfect lie and you can be, I'm not going to say aggressive, but you at least can, you can make a run at wherever it is you want to hit the ball. That's not always at the flag. A lot of time that's going to be right at the middle of the green. If you're a foot off the fairway, you could still have a decent lie in that sandy wild area, or you could be absolutely dead. Like the margin of error between those two shots could be 2 or 3 strokes, depending on how you're able to recover, depending on the luck of the draw. If you end up in a bad spot, if you end up in a bush, if you end up in some of that wire grass. So that being said, I'm going to go back.
So that's why Scottie Scheffler is not going to win this golf tournament. That was the
rationale
for why Scottie is not going to win.
No, because he is the one guy that controls the variables, as he's proven this year and the last 2 years, really. He's the one that controls the variables better than anybody else. And it's hard to believe, watching him play golf the last few weeks, that even if he does get a bad break, and we saw it last week, he made a 7 on number 9 on Saturday, if I remember that correctly. And everyone thought, oh, the door's open at Memorial, and that wasn't the case at all, because he just did what Scottie Scheffler does, and he put the big S, which stands for Scottie, on his chest, and he just kept flying along on his way to yet another victory. I think that he should still be the easy favorite, and that's why I picked him over the field. I'm not as convinced now as I probably was on Monday before I went out and actually walked the golf course, because of all the reasons I just explained.
Yeah, I mean, there's certainly an inevitability about Scottie. You know, I think it's the safest bet in golf that he's not going to miss the cut and that he's very likely going to top five finish at this U.S. Open. You could make certainly a compelling argument that Scottie Scheffler could win this golf tournament by a number of shots. Perhaps not the 8 shots that we saw Martin Kaymer did. That seems like a bit of an anomaly. Keep in mind that Martin Kaymer finished that week at 9 under par, and the next best scores with Eric Compton and Ricky Fowler were at 1 under par. That was probably where most of the field was targeting. But you could make the argument, based on Scottie Scheffler, he is the longest, straightest driver of the golf ball. He is first on the PGA Tour in distance from the fairway. In other words, he is, when he misses a fairway, he's doing so just slightly. In other words, he does not have the wild miss that can really get you in trouble at Pinehurst. So that's number one. So he's most likely hit the fairway, and if he misses, he's likely to be just a couple of feet off. Obviously, we know about his prowess with his iron play. Yes, everyone is going to be missing greens with these upside-down cereal bowl-shaped greens, these dome greens, however you want to describe it. However, Scottie Scheffler is the best bet to hit them, and especially in some of these smaller, shallow areas that you have on these Donald Ross greens. He controls his distance control better than anyone, and so that respect certainly leans in Scottie Scheffler's favor as well. Again, if players miss the green, well, Scottie Scheffler has that handled as well. He's a top five scrambler on the PGA Tour. And the putting that had been a liability for so long, for at least until March, I think has been, if not turned into an outright strength, I think it's certainly been neutralized to now you don't have sort of the same level of concern when Scottie Scheffler is standing over an 8-foot putt. Like, now, this one's probably not going to go in. He proved again and again in the clutch moments at the Memorial Tournament, specifically on 16 making par, and then the 4-foot save on 18 to win by one shot over Colin Morikawa, that he is a different player, certainly more confident putting-wise. That said, so there's the argument for why Scottie Scheffler could win this golf tournament by 5 or 6 shots, right? Like, he is playing the best. He's got the most confidence. He's the best at the moment. He has the best headspace. He's sort of the perfect on-course comportment for a U.S. Open. However, you did a great job of outlining exactly why this is a different U.S. Open test. Because of the randomness, because of the variety, because of the bad breaks that can happen, it's easy to see a player make a huge number, a double or a triple, not by necessarily even hitting bad shots, but just sort of an inopportune runoff into a really bad spot. Let's say you get a divot around the greens and you're just sort of skymied, and all of a sudden you make a six. Again, Scottie Scheffler is, I think, the best equipped to overcome that. But I just think the sheer randomness that Pinehurst presents leads me to believe that one of the other 155 players can win this golf tournament.
I think it's worth pointing out the level of anxiety that you had before going on live from today, because you were worried that 2 hours without, there were really no interviews today, the USGA press conference, and I don't know how much we ran on that. You were worried about it. And I keep coming back to the idea that you are a professional all time. Maybe even, I dare to say, top five gas bagger in the game right now. And yet somehow you were worried about filling 2 hours of airtime, because had I not hit the mute button on you, you would have kept just plowing through and giving reasons why Scottie's either going to win or not win this U.S. Open. I agree with you on that front. And I don't know, again, if you would have asked me a week ago, I said it was Scottie today, Scottie tomorrow, Scottie always, simply because of what he's done and what we know about this golf course. We get here, though, and we know that weird stuff can happen. We know that on this particular golf course, that if you get the bounce, if you don't get the lie in one of those sandy areas, that it can lead to something bad, and it can lead to something really big very, very quickly that sends you plummeting down the leaderboard. But man, you have to look at his body of work, and I just don't see a crack in the armor. He does everything well, as I just pointed out. Driving accuracy is the one stat that's going to stand out. So is approach. So is scrambling, so is putting. Like, all of the things we can point to, there's a reason why he's world number one by a mile right now, and it's all of those stats.
Let's say we get to Sunday afternoon, and somehow, some way, the bad breaks have just accumulated, and Scottie Scheffler is not winning this golf tournament. So if not Scottie, then whom? Let's throw out two names. How about the reigning PGA champion, the player who last month knocked off his first major championship, and Xander Schauffele, or Rory McIlroy, who 10 years removed from his last major championship, but in this tournament, in the U.S. Open, 5 consecutive top 10 finishes, including last year at LSAC, where he finished just a shot behind Wyndham Clark. Which of those two players, Rex, do you have the most confidence in this week at Pinehurst?
Oh, I'd have to say Xander, just because of what he did. And look, this is a recency bias, and you're getting kind of blinded by the moment. And certainly Rory is playing well enough. I know he's been a little up and down over the last few weeks. I felt like, and we talked about this, I felt like there was some clarity. I felt like there was a lightness to him yesterday when he spoke with the media that we haven't seen in the last few weeks. And we can touch on probably the reason behind that, whatever's going on in his personal life. But Xander, I think he proved to everyone, most importantly, he proved to himself that he has the game to not only contend in major championships, which he had done, but to win major championships against a charging Bryson DeChambeau, against a on a really, really difficult golf course. You still want to see it back to back, but I would lean towards Xander. I think the category that we had in our punch shot on NBCSports.com was, if not, and this is going to be a fun category going forward, if not Scotty, then who? And I actually went with Morikawa for the reasons I just kind of painted. When you look at his iron play, his long iron play is sublime. I mean, it's elite. You look at his scrambling, he is, I think, tied for 11th on tour this year in scrambling. And the one stat that I pointed out about that we know about Martin Kaymer, the last winner here at Pinehurst, Colin is third on the PGA Tour this year in one-putt percentage. 44% of his greens, he is one-putting. That's 49% of what Martin Kaymer did. I like that scenario, and he's playing really, really well right now.
Since I know you were listening to live from Colin Morikawa was actually my pick to win this golf tournament. Very accurate driver of the golf ball, sublime iron player, a vastly improved chipper and pitcher of the golf ball. This was a player who for the majority of his career was right around 100th in strokes gained total. He's now, strokes gained around the green. He's now firmly inside at the top 25. I like the way he's trending, specifically since the Masters tournament. He was in the mix there. He was in the mix in the final group at the PGA Championship as well. And Rex, with two major championships, he knocked those off in short order before the age of 25. I'm not sure Colin Morikawa loves being in sort of the shadow of Scottie Scheffler's recent dominance. To me, I've sort of picked up on a little bit of edge to Colin Morikawa. I think last week, even at the Memorial Tournament, could add even further fuel. I do like him. Back to the original question that was posed, I too like Xander Schauffele this week. The completeness of his game, historically, actually, the major championship in which Xander Schauffele has fared the best is the U.S. Open. I think he took everyone by surprise at Erin Hills back in 2017, but he has a sort of all-around game as well as sort of the plodding demeanor. He doesn't quite pack the same explosiveness as a Rory McIlroy. I think Xander will be firmly in the mix again. I think Rory is a very curious one, though. Obviously, you look at the love life, and we're not going to get into that, the lightness that he now seems to have, but there was a very spirited debate. Of course, it happened off camera. What strategy should Rory McIlroy employ this week? Is Rory McIlroy with a driver in his hands, that's the most feared weapon in golf. Aggression or seizing opportunities is not really the name of the game at Pinehurst. Everyone says it's either a second shot golf course or even a third shot golf course. What strategy do you think is best for Rory to bring out the best in his game this week at the U.S. Open?
The driver, as we all know, when it comes to Rory McIlroy, is the best weapon in his bag. When he's driving the ball well, that's when he gets that stride about him, and you know he's feeling good about himself. He's feeling himself. That's usually when he plays his best golf. That's almost always when he plays his best golf. However, I will revisit what Bryson DeChambeau said earlier this week when he was asked about his strategy for this golf course, and he made it clear he's probably going to dial back that driver game, that length game that he is really good at, as well, because he pointed out you can drive the ball 350 yards, you can run out another 40 yards, which I again thought that was another fascinating conversation, and be next to the green in an awful spot, or you can be 180 yards back in the middle of the fairway in a much more advantageous spot. This is not a normal setup. You don't historically, and this goes back to pretty much the beginnings of the game, and this I did this in a story a few years ago when I was trying to do the Moneyball theme, trying to come out like, what's on base percentage? Like, what is golf's magic stat? And I kept coming back to the idea that it's just distance. It's always been that way. Everyone wants to make this out to be a modern problem. It's not. The closer you are to the game, the closer you are to the hole, the easier it is to score. In this particular case, though, I feel like that's only going to get you into more and more trouble. To Rory's point, and he pointed this out in his press conference, he's good at other things. His wedge play has improved dramatically over the last few years. He has been a bit of a streaky putter, but I feel like he's more consistent now working with Brad Faxon than he has been the last few years. So it's not as though you're taking the one weapon out of his hands that he has, but you're taking the best weapon, his driver, out of his hands.
I do think he's done a good job over the past half decade or so, or sort of shedding the perception of Rory McIlroy as a golfer who just bombs it, who can only win on long and soft golf courses. I mean, five consecutive top tens in golf's toughest majors on a variety of different tracks. whether it was Pebble Beach, whether it was LACC, whether it was Wingfoot. I mean, those are vastly different tests, and he has performed admirably in all of those. Yes, he has had varying levels of success. I think obviously LACC last year was his best opportunity to win, but he also was just a couple shots behind Matt Fitzpatrick heading into that final round at the Country Club, as well as at a tournament in which the winning total ended up being 6 under par. To me, the thing that scares me about Rory this week is the precision with his approach play. That is something that he has worked very hard this year to sort of correct. He had the left miss going. He said he was fighting two swings. I don't quite think that the level of precision that is going to be required to hitting in these very small shelves is quite up to snuff with Rory McIlroy this week, but we shall see. Even though, Rex, you and I are not gambling experts, and even though we do not have really a betting strategy with NBCSports.com/golf and sort of the content providing for the people, I have come to understand that there are a lot of people who listen to this podcast who would love some tips. They would love for you to pick some players. If you have some sort of office pool, if you'd love to shed a few of your hard-earned dollars on some players this week, give the folks at home some names of players who could pop up and surprise. Not necessarily to win the golf tournament. You can throw those out there too. But how about top five or top 10 as well?
This would have been cool for us to talk about before we actually started the pod, so I could have pulled up the odds, because I'm going to gas bag a little bit here because you threw this one at me. I was actually just texting or Snapchatting with one of my son's friends who was asking exactly that. He has an office pool and he wanted to know who I would pick. And I'm like, well, Scotty, let's not be silly about it. But after Scotty, it was some combination of, I put,
but Scotty is not a good bet necessarily.
It's not. 3-1 is a terrible bet.
At 3-1, you do not necessarily want to be spending your hard earned cash on that. So go a little bit further. I'm not necessarily looking for.
I do actually. I have two numbers. And I do. And so I'm glad I actually was doing something on Snapchat that's helping me with my career right now. Tommy Fleetwood is +3,500. And that's a pretty good number for a player that's playing well. I'll go back to the PGA Championship. He made the cut on the number, had to make eagle on the 36th hole just to make it to the weekend, and played really, really well. And 2 weeks later in Canada, I sort of talked to him about the idea of, what did you take from that? And it's funny, we always sort of focus on the top five players on Sunday, and either you win or you lose. And how did that impact your play? Making the cut like that and then having a decent weekend and posting what otherwise you would look at a year from now and be like, oh, it's a nondescript top 15 or whatever the case may be. It can give a player a ton of confidence. And I think that's what it did with Tommy Fleetwood. And all the things that we just sat here and talked about, Tommy Fleetwood does pretty well. He's a good driver of the golf ball, at least right now. He seems to have fought his way out of some swing issues. And he's a really good iron player. It just kind of depends on he has a good putting week. The second one of those, and this is even better, and I think I'm probably stealing this player from you, is Willie Z, your boy, Will Zalatoris. He is +6,500. And it's all going to depend on the putter when it comes to Willie. And we've seen him get really, really hot and win in Memphis. And then we've seen him struggle. And certainly since he's come back from injury, he's been a little inconsistent on that front. But I think this golf course is going to mitigate a little bit the really, really good putters from the middle of the pack guys. And I think that's good for Willie Z.
I'm with you on the Tommy Fleetwood train at 45-1.
You don't like Willie Z?
No, I like Tommy Fleetwood a lot. Keep in mind, he almost stole that 2018 U.S. Open at Shinnecock with a great weekend round that year. I specifically think his number at 45-1 is very, very appetizing. I like Cam Smith. He was a player who I pointed out in our punch shot at NBCSports.com/golf. He has been seemingly a little bit quiet in the major championships since his move to LIV Golf. He actually has 3 top 10s in his last 5 major starts. Maybe not in the best form. I think that's what you're seeing with his number here at 50-1. He's coming off a final round 80 at the LIV Golf Houston event on Sunday. But to me, he still has the best pair of hands, at least top 5 pair of hands in golf. And this is a great opportunity for him to showcase some of those short game skills. A couple other names that I will throw out there. Matt Fitzpatrick has come into form, former U.S. Open champion as well. Sahith Theegala, love the creativity and imagination he has shown. He's also popped up in a couple of major championships this year. And if you want to go really, really deep, probably not to win the golf tournament, at least we hope not to win the golf tournament, but potentially top 10 this week, I like Russell Henley, a supreme iron player, as well as Denny McCarthy, who, if I had a 10-footer in which I would either live or die, I think I would have Denny McCarthy putting that one for me.
You can that get sounds those like guys some Georgia homerism there, if you're asking.
Around 100-1 or lower. Rex, how about some final thoughts? What are you most looking forward to see? Obviously, we'll be doing the mini pods after each and every tournament round. Those are just 15 to 20 minutes in length. Fingers crossed on that. But how about Thursday? For Thursday's opening round, I know you will be on site bright and early because they've been calling you chops around here in the media center. This is a direct response to what happened with the Scottie Scheffler incident at the PGA Championship. You will be on the ground. I mean, 5 a.m., 5:30 a.m., making sure absolutely nothing happens. You're going to have plenty of time to ponder this. You'll have plenty of the opening round to digest. So we look forward to seeing.
I want to see how the golf course plays. The USGA spoke, John Bodenhammer, who's their COO, Chief of Tournament Operations. And it's fun to talk to the USGA this particular week because, look, it's a microscope here. I made the mistake of tweeting out a picture of them watering not real greens, practice greens yesterday. And I was kind of amazed how X sort of blew up on this topic in a very, very weird way. I think my caption to that photo was nothing but going to see a lot of this week. Not because I feel like the USGA has juiced up the golf course. Not because I feel like Wyndham Clark said that it's too close to the edge right now. Just because it's going to be really, really hot. It's going to be around 100 degrees, at least tomorrow and the next day. There's going to be a lot of humidity in the air. There's going to be a hot wind blowing across this golf course. They're going to have to water the greens, and it has nothing to do with whether or not they either made a mistake or didn't make a mistake with the setup. Grass just needs water if it's going to live when it's really, really hot. That's the only point I was trying to make. But when it comes to the idea, and this goes back to the old saying, that they're not trying to embarrass the world's best golfers, they're trying to identify them. And that's a very lofty statement, and it's something that we all will look forward to at this particular championship on this golf course. It can go either way really fast. So I think by noon tomorrow, Thursday, we'll have an idea of, okay, how close to the sun is the USGA willing to fly with this one? Because this is a staple venue. We're going to be coming back here for a really long time. I think it's 14 times in the next 25 years for various championships. They've done a lot of work to this particular facility to make sure it's a really good U.S. Open venue, and it is. But if you fly too close to the sun, if you get it too close to the edge and players start complaining, I'll be curious to see how they dial it back.
I mean, I would be shocked if there are errors in the setup made for Thursday's opening round. I do think the scoring will be at its best on Thursday. Again, keep in mind, a quote-unquote exceptional score is 66, 67, 68. This is a brutally difficult golf course. I'd be shocked if there is an error. I think you make a great point about the anchor site. In the USGA, over the past couple of years, under Mike Wan, under John Bodenhammer, under Jeff Hall, have done a great job of recognizing the past mistakes from Chambers Bay and pushing those greens too far, or Shinnecock and getting those to be a little bit too unplayable. They're very cognizant of making those same mistakes again. To your point, they're not trying to embarrass the players or push them to the breaking point. They're trying to provide a complete examination. But the reality of the situation is, as an anchor site, you do not want to have a stain on this golf course. And that can happen with just one screw up on one of these hole locations. I think back to the U.S. Women's Open and the 12th hole in that opening round. The scoring average on the par 3 12th hole was over 4 for that opening round. It was too penal for the very best players in the world. And as a result, you had a situation where I think 8 or 9 of the top 10 players in the world ended up missing the cut. That was not providing the best, most complete examination. They were not identifying the best players that week. I think they'll be very hesitant to push this too far, knowing that they're going to be coming back so frequently. You don't want the tournament to be defined by one or two mistakes like we've seen so often in the past.
Well, and that's a really good point. I have so much trust in the USGA now. The association has evolved. It's matured, whatever it is you want to call it, over the last few years, certainly with Mike Wan being in charge. You and I both had a gloriously fun time during the press conference today because we made a bet about how long his opening comments were going to be, and I believe your over-under number was?
Mine was 6.5. You took, I believe, the hook.
I took 5.5.
Yeah.
I did take the under, and in case anyone is curious, he blew through that by almost double. It was 12. It was almost 13 minutes. So
with almost no notes, like one of the most gifted speakers we've ever seen.
A lot of funny stories, a lot of jabs at the media and the crowd. Good-natured jabs. So I have a lot of trust in the organization. The reason I'm curious to see how tomorrow evolves, and by noon we should have a better idea, is because this particular golf course, under these conditions, already is very close to the razor's edge. We're already seeing it. We started on Monday. When I walked this golf course on Monday, you could see balls, well-hit shots, rolling off or around or into bunkers or whatever the case may be. It would not take a lot. It's only going to take a little nudge to get this golf course, at least in the players' eyes, too far over the edge. They won't do it, but you're always curious to see.
Golf course obviously is going to be the star of the show on Thursday. There is the premier grouping going off like roughly 1 o'clock Eastern time on Thursday with Scottie Scheffler, Xander Schauffele, Rory McIlroy. That'll obviously be the center of attention as well. We haven't even touched Rex. Hopefully we'll get to them later on in this tournament week. Bryce DeChambeau, I think, is a very polarizing pick this week at the U.S. Open and how he's going to adapt to the unique challenges here. Brooks Koepka, 5-time major champion, U.S. Open bully. Curious to see his form after being outside the top 25 in his last three major championships as well. All of those players will certainly be on my radar for Thursday's opening round. All right. That is going to do it for this edition of the Golf Channel Podcast with Rex and Lab. As mentioned, you guys can rely on our mini podcast after each and every tournament round. We will try to upload those as quickly as possible following the completion of play on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday before the full pod as usual on Sunday afternoon. Make sure to catch Rex Hoggard on live from the U.S. Open each and every night as well. Thanks for listening. Thanks for the support. We'll talk to you guys on Thursday night.